presence, the now, refers to our eternity. We can never think of it, represent it to it. Because we are it. It is an instantaneous a perception. That it refers to our totality. Every step undertaken to find it is going away. It is the ultimate goal in every human being to know it, to be it. It is everlasting peace and joy. Any question?
You've said that it's only through inquiry, through asking the question, who am I, that we can come to know our real nature, ourselves. At what point in a lifetime does the question really come up? When do we really feel the question?
It needs a certain maturity to come to this question. By maturity, I mean that you know in a certain way already what you are not. This knowing what you are not brings you to the forefeeling what you are. The moment you know what you are not, you are free from all directions. And you are brought back to the starting point. It means, who am I? in this moment, there's no more reference to anything, to anything known. And then I would say, you are taking my reality. There's no more a knower in something known. There's only being the known.
But how can I ask the question so that it doesn't remain mental, so that it has real transformative power to change my life? Otherwise, it remains a mental repetition or a mental inquiry. How do I make it a really existential question, living question?
When you ask the question, you don't know the answer. So automatically you find yourself in a state of not knowing. In this state of not knowing, your mind is completely unfurnished. You are free from all representation. It is only in the state of not knowing, in this openness of not knowing, waiting for the eventual known, then the waiting becomes free from what it is waiting for. In this waiting, without waiting, there is the living answer.
What does it mean to be enlightened?
It's supposed that there's somebody to be enlightened. As long as you take yourself for somebody, you live in darkness. When you realize that the somebody is a mental image that it is when you think of it, when you produce it. Then you give it up. This image has no more a role to play. And in this instantaneous giving up, it gives you up. It produces, I would say, a great laughing. In this laughing, there's light. You will feel yourself free from all representation. You function in daily life, but all functions refer to you.
Many teachers teach different forms of meditation practice. If a person sincerely follows a meditation practice, will that lead him to the consciousness or the non-state that you have referred to?
Going to meditation means to find yourself in a laboratory. The entity which looks for peace, joy, security. In other words, God. We'll never find it because our cerebrality can never know what truth really is. So as long as you haven't found the meditator, meditation is an illusion. And it's given up, the meditator, and even the meditation. And what remains, I would say, is a current of love. Where is not a lover and a beloved.
But the conditioning to take ourselves as a person runs so deeply. Don't we need some kind of technique or process to break ourselves of this identification, to decondition, so to speak, the mind and the body.
Every state, every object refers to the now. It appears in the now and it vanishes in the now. Every technique remains you in the realm of the mind. But it can never free yourself from the mind, free from memory. So I would say, see really. What is next to you? What is the near to you? Look at your nearness. It can never be an object. It can never be a state. You are your nearness. Otherwise, just conditioning and conditioning. To see it really clearly means wisdom.
Sean, isn't this rather confusing for someone who would come to one of your seminars and find that there is meditation, there is body work, an Advaita yoga, you might say, where we're working with sensation and feeling, the energy body, all of which ultimately have to be objects, all of which are existent and not eternal. What do they have to do with this nearness, this presence you're speaking of?
We are working with objects. Sensation, feelings. But really we don't know these original perceptions, original feelings. We know only certain pattern. In this session, you become familiarized with listening. Listening to your sensation, to your feelings, to your reactions, resistance, in this listening, you give the feeling, the sensation, the opportunity to unfold itself in your observation. It comes to a new reorchestration of your feelings and sensations. This unfolding is only possible because you are open to it. You welcome it. Not welcoming as an idea, but really with your whole being open to it. So it refers to your totality. You realize that it is a new, but you are not in the body, in the perception, in the feeling. Sometimes we use certain techniques which generally are used in progressive way, but it is only occasionally. Is the idea behind that what we are looking for, we are it fundamentally. Because in the end, all things appear in the now. And it has its reality in the now. It is the now which gives the perceptions, the perceivings, its reality. I would say only then they have a certain reality. They have an expanded reality. But at the end, it belongs to the now, to the present. All that appears is a prolongation, an expansion of the now, of consciousness, of awareness. So, it brings you back, in other words, to your real nature. Because all that is done emphasizes not on the object part, but on the ultimate subject part, consciousness.
This listening that you speak of, is this a integral part of being, or is it an attribute, a way toward being?
Listening of which we are speaking is free from all memory. There's no expectations. There's no goal. In this listening, we are looking away from the goal. We're looking away from the target. So it is unconditioned listening. In listening, the listening is open to itself. It refers to itself. And at the end, it knows itself by itself.
You've said that all objects point to our true nature or the background. Do some objects point more directly, and just what do you mean by this?
All objects point where your real nature. But when you see nearer, an object is more or less sense perceptions. It belongs to our five senses. So generally, when the mind is not informed that you are behind all sense perceptions, then you are more or less fixed to the sense perceptions. So your question, if there are other forms of objects which reveals your real nature, I would say these are objects which points directly to beauty. That means these are objects which has been conceived, produced in beauty. And these objects, the artist which offers it to you in a certain way, don't emphasize the object part of it producing. It is why he produced it in a very economic way. He frees the object of its objectivity. So the listener or the person who look at it will be free from the senses and brought back to real beauty. The artist has from time to time this feeling of absolute beauty, free from the person And in this state, free from the person, the artist likes, I would say, to thank thinking to be allowed to be. And this thinking brings him to offering. He offers it. And the object which he offers is free from any anecdotic part and free from keeping it for the senses. So in a certain way, he shares with you the beauty, this beauty and your own beauty and oneness. It is so in listening to music, it is also in looking at any art objects, sculpture, painting, architecture, and so on.
In this enlightened non-state, what about feelings and emotions? Do you feel anger or happiness and joy in the same way, or is there a difference?
When you are established in the now, in the present, there's no place for somebody who reacts, who resists. All what appears to you appears to your totality. All counterparts, positive, negative, I would say abolished. You may say certain things appearing in your life are not completely appropriate. That is sure. But it will not be a reaction. When you qualify it, it is more or less that it's not functional. but you're not more psychologically involved in it.
Jean, I'd like to ask a question about relationships. When two people come together, like a man and a woman, and live with each other, and one of them is interested in this kind of approach to life and the other perhaps isn't, there's often a lot of ground for conflict, which has led me to feel sometimes that it might be better if I were living alone. It might be somehow easier to accomplish this kind of awakening. And I wondered what you had to say about that.
It is love which brought both together. And it is in this oneness that the personality of each unfolds. But both personalities refers to oneness, to love. When the personality of the woman, of the man, don't refer to the oneness, to love, you can be sure there is a kind of degeneration. Because the personality, the character, or what we call the individual, has its reality in this oneness, in love. It is so on every level. Every activity in its own level refers to this oneness. Otherwise, there's a moment, there's no more stimulation. It is this oneness which gives life to all activities. The moment we believe in this restricted being of personality to personality, of man and woman, then you can be sure there's not only a kind of degeneration in its form of energy, but there's constant compulsion. Because the personality is completely insecure, looks for security the moment it doesn't refer to the oneness, just only asking, demanding. So you must refer to the original encounter, you as a man with a woman, that means love.
Jean, you just mentioned referring to the oneness. I notice that when I experience fear, I identify almost totally with my body and biological survival. How can I break that restricted identification when I'm in that state?
Fear is first a perception. You feel fear. And then feeling, you qualify it, you name it, you say fear. But the word fear is memory. Refers to a certain pattern, but you have the notion what you mean by fear. So the idea of fear doesn't refer to the actual fear, to the actual perception. So pedagogically, I would say, free yourself from the concept fear. Then you face really the perception, which is localized in your body. See in this moment how you function. You try to change the fear. You try to escape. You try by all means to refuse it. And in refusing, escaping, you give more or less fuel to the fear. When you see it really, there's a moment, natural, that you allow the fear to be fear. And it becomes energy. Really energy at life. You accept it completely. It is not psychological acceptance, but it is functional acceptance. You accept it to know it more and more deeply. Then the perception refers completely to your accepting. It is in this accepting position that what you accept frees itself. And it dissolves in you, in your presence. It reveals really what you are profoundly. Live with the fear more and more deeply. Accept it. Even love it. You are not more bound to it. The moment you are not more bound to it, the moment you are not more involved in it, it frees itself. It is a reaction. But in accepting it, you go completely through the fear. You remain completely witness to it. It vanishes in your witnessing. Means intimate living. You are able to do it.
Oh, this question has probably come up many, many times, but it's the issue of money and our desire for it and how we use it. And our feeling that it is going to provide security for us. Could you speak about the issue of money and our proper relationship to it?
I have observed that many people have a wrong relationship with money. First, I would say you are not the owner of your money. You are the administrator. And being administrator of your money, you are detached in a certain way. You have not a non-relation with your money. Because in ownership, there's avidity. There's striving, becoming. When you're administrator, there's only functioning. Right functioning with your money. and spending it, and then earning it. But the first thing, what I think is that you are completely not more emotional, psychologically involved. With your money. It is generally when you take your money for yourself, an expansion of yourself, belonging to yourself, that you will have a bad death. You will only dying. You will never really dying. It is your money which keeps you from dying. Many people taking risk with your body and mind. But they would never take risk with the money. So money is something which keeps you bounds you, lets you never go. Because there's a moment in life that there has to go. But what is important that when you be really an administrator of your money, you the distribution and the earning comes really functional. It comes, has been coming to you because somebody has spent it. Apparently, I don't see that you're spending money in the wrong way, earn it in the wrong way. The question may be more or less with the mind.
Thank you.
I think in daily life, we should come often back to the starting point. At the starting point, you can never think of it. Because the moment you think of the starting point, the point is already in the past. The starting point is the presence. The eternal now. All flows out from the now, and all appears and disappears in the now. And the now is a kind of original perception. It is a direct a perception where you know yourself in your totality. But there's not a knower. There's only known.